El Camino People, The Podcast, Episode 35. Ultreya fellow pilgrims, I am Josemar Arnaz, your pilgrim friend, and this is El Camino People, the podcast. Today, in our show, I'm joined by Brian Stewart. He's an awesome pilgrim from the United States. He walked the Camino a couple years ago, and he did for a great cause. Also, he was there suffering, like some other people that are suffering from different illness, and they decided to go the Camino as a challenge and a way to show them and the world that they can do it. But in Brian's Camino, he took his time. That's why we titled the episode of today, Finding Your Own Pace. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think in the Camino, a lot of the things is about finding your own pace, being on your own time, no rushing, no running. It is your Camino, and you are the only one that can walk it for yourself. So that will be the main topic of today. Also, I want to invite all of you to visit our store on the website. Remember, we do have a lot of different merchandise that you can buy to support us and to be part of that Camino family. Also, maybe you have seen lately in Instagram and on Facebook that little patch that we send all the people that go into our podcast or that participate in the roundtables. If you want to have the patch of the Camino people, you can go to the website and you can buy it, and we will love to send it to you so you can put it in your backpack. So here we are, one more day. Let's talk Camino, let's enjoy, and hope to see you soon. Let's start with Brian's interview. Hi everyone, and welcome to El Camino People, the podcast. Today with us we have Brian. Hi Brian, how are you doing?
Hey Jose, I'm good. How are you?
No complaints, you know, everything, it was changing here in Spain for the best. Right now is the first weekend that actually, you know, Galicians can ride to Santiago. So we've been seeing, you know, like yesterday there was, I think, like five Compostelas given to people. But here we still cannot cross the borders of the state. So a lot of people is kind of pissed because we are receiving, you know, a lot of French and Germans that they're coming to Spain to party. So it's like, I'm not allowed to party in my own country, but people from out of the country can come. Numbers are going up. Yeah. So I guess the whole situation, like, everyone else. I don't know, guys, how are you doing, guys, over there in New Jersey?
Yeah, it's starting to get a little better. I mean, it's still not much has changed since, really, since the last year when it started. I mean, things are still kind of shut down. You can't really go out without a mask on. But, I mean, cases are starting to go down. I think the vaccine's helping. So it's slowly coming around.
Yeah, you guys are doing quite a great job with the vaccines in the States. And like all my friends over there, I lived there for a while. And there's many people, you know, here in Europe still, you know, taking because of the problems with the AstraZeneca and all the stuff and some. But I guess, you know, the better we all get the vaccine, the better we all go back to normal life, normal Camino, and we will be walking again. So I don't know you, but I'm ready to go out as soon as I can.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the things getting back to normal so I can get out and travel and do things. And it's,
you know, freelancer working from home, I'm done. I'm like, it's already 1 year being at home. It's just incredible, you know, the whole life goes on. But a lot of people told me, you know, that this kind of like staying at home has been like the Camino. Like the Camino has been teaching, you know, because the Camino, we wake up, we do the same. And here, I don't know if you work at home or not, but for me, you know, at the end, it's the same day by day. Nothing has changed a lot during this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken some adjusting. It's, you know, it's a new change, new lifestyle to get used to. So I think it's like the Camino in a strange way like that, where it's something new, you have to adjust and get used to it. It's...
Yeah, and just look for another beer at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, we always start with a one-minute questionnaire. So one-minute set of questions. We have here the questionnaire. I don't know which one you prefer, Spanish or English. I guess we will go for the English version.
I think English. Yeah.
So we have 1 minute, as I said before. You know, don't overthink it, whatever comes to your mind. A lot of times, you know, people, it's funny, like, I remember this one crazy, the other day I was interviewing a guy from Germany, the one, the podcast we posted last week, and one of his questions about meal was fried beans. And like, I don't know where in the Camino you eat fried beans, but I don't think that's kind of like common. So that's the whole idea, you know, something that comes, throw it out, and you know, it's just to break the ice. So are you ready?
I'll try to keep the Camino in mind, yeah, for the questions. Okay, yeah.
Let's go.
All right, I'm ready.
First Camino.
2017, Camino Francés.
How many Caminos?
Two Caminos.
One month to walk.
Camino Francés.
One city.
Pamplona.
One meal.
Boca de Hamon.
One song.
One song.
Okay.
Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles.
A happy moment.
Finishing the Camino.
A sad moment.
When I got food poisoning on the Camino.
Ooh, one color.
Red.
A smell.
The ocean.
Canteen or camelback?
Canteen.
Long or shorts?
Short.
Fisterra or Muxía?
Finisterre.
And finally, a drink?
Red wine.
Good job. Pretty good. So, you see, no, not a problem at all. Anyway, it's funny how, you know, we start thinking all these memories come right away with the Camino, and I always start, you know, all the interviews with the same question. How and when did you find out about the Camino de Santiago?
Well, for me, I didn't really have, like, this one moment where, like, I found out about it. It was something I kind of always knew about.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the first time I heard of it was probably, I remember picking up the book The Pilgrimage by Paulo Coelho. I didn't read it when I first picked up. I kind of looked at it. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And I kind of skimmed it. Like, oh, it's, I kind of learned what the Camino was. And then, like, in my early 20s, I was kind of researching trails around the world that I could hike one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of rediscovered the Camino. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember hearing about that. And I kind of did some research. And that's how I kind of learned about it and decided that I wanted to do it.
So was that something that was in your mind for a long time and you were kind of like holding on it, kind of like, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it was just like I knew like a bunch of trails around the world. It was one of the trails that I knew, like the Appalachian Trail, the Camino, a couple all over the world that I thought that maybe one day it would be something cool to hike.
So you're the ones like me that have the list of trails that I would like to hike one day. And it just keeps growing and growing, you know, no matter how many trails you check out, there's always many more that come.
Yeah, I think like in my early 20s, like I just wanted to get out and travel, and I was just thinking of all the different things that I could do, the hiking trails or just going to explore places, and just something I kind of always had in the back of my mind there.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, you've been always a kind of like a sport guy, hiking, going all over the place, or was that something new that brought, you know, back when you were like start to hiking, researching the Camino?
Well, I kind of grew up doing a lot of traveling and hiking. My family did a lot of did a lot of road trips around the country, a lot of traveling and hiking, outdoor exploration kind of stuff. So I kind of grew up being outdoors. So it wasn't something new for me when I decided I want to do the Camino.
Hmm. So tell us a little bit, when I was reading your blog, you said that first you walked like a big mountain in the States, that there was something higher, you know, that before going into the whole, you know, 45-day of the Camino, you decided to do some hikes over there just as a training, or was it something to challenge yourself to see how far you will go?
I did. Let's get some background, I guess, to start off with. I have a condition with my leg, my muscles, mm-hmm. called Becker muscular dystrophy.
Okay.
So it's a progressive neuromuscular disease that causes my muscles to get weaker over time. And so I've always had difficulty like walking up steps, walking up hills, going really long distances. So that's kind of always been a motivation for me to want to stay active, to kind of keep my body
strong. So that never stopped you to go, like you've always been super active no matter what your leg was going.
Yeah. I always try to stay active and just do what I want to do. So when I was in college, I was involved with this group that raised awareness for neuromuscular diseases like muscular dystrophy.
Mm-hmm.
And we organized this walk across New Jersey. Me and a friend of mine, we did a walk from the Delaware River to the Atlantic Ocean. It was like a 50-mile walk. We did it over the course of 3 days to kind of raise awareness for the group at my college. And that was kind of like the first like big, like long walk that I did. And after I did that, I kind of started thinking, yeah, I want to do something like bigger, something longer one day. So a year out of college, that's when I kind of decided to do the Camino.
Was there anyone with your disease? Like, you know, a lot of people right now, we see people with all kind of, you know, disease challenging the SAMs coming to the Camino that have done the Camino. Was that something that you thought about? Was the, you know, that push you, or was just already that's you know with the Camino and you want to challenge yourself?
I mean, a little bit of both. I mean, I knew that it was that my vacation is going to progress in the future, so I really want to stay active and do things mm-hmm. while I can. But it was also, I wanted to do the Camino. It was something that I wanted to do. So I wasn't going to let something prevent me from doing that. I was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to let something hold me back. Even though it's more difficult for me, I might have to really struggle over some places. I'm going to do it no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of struggles do you have on a normal day? You know, for many people that don't know how it is this, you know, what is the problem that you have on a normal daily?
On a normal day, I think the biggest thing is walking up steps. Mm-hmm. That's difficult for me. I mean, in my lifestyle, I've kind of adapted my lifestyle to avoid things, you know, that challenge me. Mm-hmm. You know, I avoid steps when I can, and sometimes lifting really heavy things, I'll need someone to help me. So, I mean, it doesn't affect me too much. It's more like when I'm like, to walk up a hill or lift something really heavy, that's when it really affects me more.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, you know, running, hiking, biking, if it's normal, do you have a normal?
Yeah, I mean, well, I can't run. Okay. Riding a bike is hard for me. Anything that's like very like physical, it's anything besides walking. I mean, I don't walk super fast. I kind of walk at I don't want to say slow pace, but I can't walk like super fast.
Yeah.
And on the Camino, that really challenged me. You know, when I'm walking, you know, 10, 12 miles a day, I have to walk over the Pyrenees Mountains, that really, really slowed me down and really, really challenged me.
So what did your family know, you know, if your friends, your doctors, some, like, when you're in a situation like this and you're saying, you know, I'm going to jump from a 50K that you did, then you walk a couple mountains over there, but then you want to make it all the way to another country with different language by yourself and walk 500 miles. What people tell you?
I mean, a lot of people thought I was crazy. They were like, what are you doing? Like, I'd never even left the United States before. So my first time overseas in a foreign country, you know, on this big hike that I don't know if I'll be able to do. They were just kind of like, what are you thinking? and I think they were justified to think that. But, you know, it's definitely ill-advised for someone with my condition to do that. My muscles, like, it's, if I push myself too hard, if I damage my muscles, it's hard from the heel sometimes. Mm-hmm. So it's, potentially it could be a bad thing, but it was really just I had to go slow, take my time, not push myself too hard. And yeah, that was kind of the mindset I went over with, just kind of take a day at a time.
Did you train for a while, or did you have, you know, like try on a lot of people? We know that now, you know, there's people that train for like 2 weeks with the backpack with the stuff in their house. Or were you just, you know, I know that I can do 50. I know that it's going to take me a different way, but I'm just ready to go.
Oh, I trained. I definitely trained. I remember I started training. I went to the Camino in end of August, mid-August. Yeah. So I started training, like, I think it was April. I started doing like 5-10 mile walks every day, getting myself in shape, making sure I could do it. But I mostly trained like on flat ground, walking like trails around my house. So when I got to Spain, it was a little overwhelming. So, you know, I trained on flat ground, and here I had to go over like hills and mountains. It was a lot to start off with.
There's not that many, but at the beginning it's quite true. So you decided to walk the French way, I guess. And you started in Saint-Jean?
Yep, I started in Saint-Jean. And I remember the first day I got there the night before I started the hike. That walk up to the pilgrim's office through town, up that main street there, was like really steep. I was like slipping on the cobblestone rocks. Like I fell a couple times going up that hill, and I was just like, how am I going to cross the Pyrenees tomorrow? How am I going to do this hike when I can't even walk up the road, like, just to check into the pilgrim's office?
That's one of the things that I tell for a lot of people, you know, when you're coming from abroad, the first day I always say, you know, take a day off in Saint-Jean for the jet lag, for everything, and pushing yourself. And if you are, you know, on a point that you don't think you can make it all the way, there is a beautiful albergue in the middle of Orison that is great. But I guess in your case, you did it all in one way. So how was the first day? I'm like, for people that don't know, you know, that the first day in Saint-Jean is quite hard, even for a sports person, even for a normal person. So in your case, you know, the biggest problem was going up. So that steep hill probably was quite difficult for you.
Yeah, I remember as soon as there's like that downhill walk through town. Then when you kind of get to the end of town there, you hit that hill there. It's like hitting a brick wall. Like,
and you see the big board saying, yeah, don't do this in the winter.
Yeah. It's intimidating. It's like immediately, I'm just like, what am I doing here? Like, it's so challenging. And there's the Val Carlos route is the alternate route you can take.
Mm-hmm. The one that they.
So I remember standing there at that where it crossed. I'm like, I really want to go up the Napoleon route. I was just like, I'm just gonna do it. I'm just gonna go the hard way. It's because I want to see the Pyrenees. I want to, you know, really experience a Camino. So.
So you already go on your first day, and you're like, you know, I'm taking the hard way. So how was the hard way? Because usually, you know, I'm like, For me, I remember quite well my first day over there. I remember just walking super slow. I remember the first turn in one of the roads that start to go super uphill. You could just see, you know, I saw like a couple of books, people probably leaving things from their backpacks. How was it for you?
I really just had to take my time and just put one step, one foot in front of the other. I remember thinking like, oh, it's going to be a paved road for the first little bit. It's not going to be that hard. But that didn't really make it easier at all. It's straight up all the way. Yeah, I remember just stopping like every, like I take a couple steps, just stop, catch my breath. It was just, it's grueling those first couple miles into Orison where I spent the first night there.
That's beautiful. I love that you said, you know, in your blog, you said that a lot of people, they say that the Camino is physical. Some people say that the Camino is mental. How was that first day for you?
I think it was, it's just as mentally challenging as it's physically challenging. And I think finishing that first day, even though it was just a couple miles into Orison there, like just finishing that day is, it can't be counted in mileage. Like that's like the most important step, just finishing that first day and just getting over the hurdle of, you know, I can make it this one day, I can make it another day. But that very first day, when you haven't even made it to your first albergue, it's just intimidating. It's like, how am I going to do this for weeks to come?
But I guess it also meant that you could do it, no? They said a lot of times when you are backpacking, you know, I remember the movie about this guy that got stuck in Moab, or people that when you're in that kind of decisions, you just have to focus on a really, really close point that you can make it. So once you achieve it, you can put another point. So in your case, you made it the first day to Orison. How was the feeling of being there? And also, what I always say is that the first day is when you get to be feeling like a pilgrim, because in Zhanjiang, we're all weird guys from nowhere trying to find our place. And suddenly you get into Orison. There is a beautiful albergue, very few pilgrims. How was the first day over there?
I remember the first arriving there. It's nice when you get there to finally, when you sit down for that first meal there, you feel yourself like among all these other pilgrims, you really feel like you're part of the community. And that's really like humbling to feel that you're part of something. I think that really helps at the end of the first day.
Mm-hmm. And then, but the next day it continued all the way up, as they say. How was going up all till Roncesvalles?
It kept getting harder the whole way. Well, I mean, like it's, I think initially it kind of starts off kind of level from Orison.
Yeah,
it slowly gets more and more, but then when it goes off that paved road there and goes up the mountain there, that's when it's really hard. It's the climb over rocks there. That was kind of challenging for
and
me.
And also going down, it's cool. A lot of people struggle more going down to Roncesvalles than the going up.
Yeah, I remember my feet were sore when I finally reached Roncesvalles after that second day there. But for me, that was really hard getting over that. When it goes off the road and up that rocky trail there up to the top there, that was hard for me. I was hiking with someone, and she took my pack for me and helped me kind of climb up, crawl over some of the rocks there to get up. So I had some help there getting up over that part.
So, and how was the feeling? You know, I always say that the Camino provides, you know, and the pilgrims community provide. And I guess in your case, probably there was so many times that people will help you, or, you know, in many ways, it's not just carrying backpack. A lot of times, you know, just walking with someone or something. How was the feeling, you know, of being part of that community, that pilgrims that suddenly in one day you were part of?
Yeah, it was really nice feeling a part of the community. I remember like when I first started the Camino, where it was kind of weird for me to like accept help from someone, like have someone take my hand over a hill I had to get up. It was kind of weird at first. Like I'm kind of not really a person that, before the Camino, I wasn't really a person that was apt to like take help from someone. It was kind of weird for me. So I kind of had to adjust to being somewhere where I had to accept help. But once I kind of got into that mindset of, you know, the community is a community, we're all in this together, it kind of made it easy, and I kind of was open to having someone help me here or there. So it was nice to be in a place where everyone was helping each other.
And then you finish Roncesvalles, finally some slow down, relax, no more hills, well, just a couple ones. And then you get to Pamplona, the Monte del Perdón, and finally you are walking, yes, you're past the two biggest points before you get to Galicia. How was that feeling finally, you know, achieving those two big, you know, because for you were great points in your Camino, I guess.
Yeah, the hardest parts were definitely the Pyrenees and getting into Galicia and that part at the end there. Yeah, I mean, it was nice knowing the Pyrenees were behind me when I finally like got to Pamplona. Like I knew that what was behind me. And it was nice having the meseta in the middle of that nice flat area. It was kind of a good chance to kind of you know, get ready for the next mountains like Inglesia before the end. But yeah, getting over the Pyrenees, getting over the Inglesia mountains up to Osibrero and down that, once that was behind me, I kind of knew that, you know, I've got this. I'm definitely going to make it at this point.
What was harder, St. Jan or Osibrero?
I think I want to say Osibrero. That was a little harder. I mean, I think it's a little harder physically, but I think leaving St. Jean is kind of mentally harder because you don't know what you have to get through still. I want to say it's harder probably overall getting to Roncesvalles in that first day because it's just so much unknown before you. But I think physically getting to Osibrero is a little more challenging.
It is funny because, you know, it's kind of like the beginning, the end, and we all have, you know, that fight, you know, which one is more challenging. And I guess I agree with you. You know, for some people, the first day is more challenging in a mental way than physical. By the end, you're already so used to walk that a lot of people feel it easy, but it's harder mentally. Some people, they are so destroyed by the time they arrive to Sobrero that it's just hard physically. So it depends on everyone. So
yeah, because you're so fresh when you start off in St. Jean, but when you get towards the end, you're kind of worn down. So that kind of... that makes it harder too at times.
So tell us a little bit. Always, you know, a lot of people, they prepare the Camino. For you, were you one of those that have every day planned by paper, you know, I'm going to walk these 12 miles, I'm going to ride to this place, or were you a little bit, you know, the Camino will provide?
I want to say a little bit of both. I mean, I kind of had, when I start off a rough itinerary, you know, I can probably, you know, make these stages that I made. But a lot of times I kind of thought like it, maybe I'll make it here, but if I don't make it here, I can stop here. So I kind of took it a day at a time and just kind of stopped when I felt like my body told me I needed to stop.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess when I saw the your Camino, you know, it took 46 days to finish the Camino Frances, when normal, you know, average pilgrim takes about 31 to 34, a relaxing pilgrim takes about 38, 39, 40. What was the biggest challenge? You know, it's a lot of people when they start talking about the Camino, it's the Camino family, you know? But sometimes I guess also that because of the Camino family, we push ourselves to walk with that family and to stick together, and that also takes a part of the Camino. But how was in your case, you know, probably the first day you were kind of like with the same group of people, but then as the Camino get older, you probably will separate it.
Yeah, like when I started off, I kind of found myself with a group of a couple pilgrims there, and you know, initially I wanted to keep up with them, but my pace was so much slower, they kind of realized that they couldn't keep up with me. They couldn't stay with me the whole time. They had to kind of move ahead. So that was kind of initially hard, you know, that I wanted to be with this group and they were moving ahead of me. And that happened quite a few times throughout the Camino for me. But one of the moments where I kind of mentally kind of adapted to that, I was walking with this American pilgrim from South Carolina. And I was telling him, I was walking this group. I had to separate from them. I'm kind of sad that I'm leaving them. And he kind of said, well, I said, like, I'm too slow to keep up with people. And he said this line. He said, there's no such thing as slow in the Camino. There's only your own pace. And that was the moment where I was kind of like, yeah, like you kind of have to focus on yourself. You know, it's hard to like want to keep up with people and feel down that you can't keep up with them, but you kind of have to embrace your own pace and just know that it's, you're going the pace that you're going, and what's going to happen is going to happen. You just kind of have to roll with it.
Hmm. That's one of the things that, you know, it happened to me in the Camino. You know, finally you start walking with someone, then you stay a whole day back, but then you find someone else. So a lot of times, you know, it makes me think, I'm like, why did I start the day I start my Camino? Why this day I walk longer? You know, if I haven't walked longer or shorter, I wouldn't met this person. So in your case, I guess, meeting down and, you know, walking your own Camino, that is the truth. At the end, you know, the Camino is about that. It's walking your own pace and whatever comes, comes.
Yeah, I think it's actually a good learning experience too, just knowing that what's going to happen is going to happen. You just kind of roll with it. It's nice just to go along with it and just whatever happens, happens.
Mm-hmm. How are the pilgrims, you know, when you start walking with someone and they realize that you were walking a little slow, there people will ask you, will you start talking about, you know, your disease, your situation, or how was the situation, you know?
Sometimes people would be like, are you hurt? What's wrong? Other times people would kind of like be talking to me, not kind of afraid to ask me like, why are you having so much trouble? So I'll kind of tell them, you know, this is why I'm having trouble. So yeah, it took me a while I think for the majority of my life, I kind of kept like my condition to myself. Mm-hmm. I was kind of afraid to tell people.
Yeah.
When I first started the Camino, that was kind of the case. I kind of took me a while to open up and kind of reach a point where I was okay with telling people right away. Because on the Camino, it's like, you know, my day-to-day life, I can, you know, do things to avoid things that challenge me. But on the Camino, I can't do that. You know, I'm walking the Camino. There's no way to hide from the things that challenge me on the Camino. You know, I can't get away from my condition.
There's no way. I'm like, the way you walk the car, because I guess you were walking with the backpack, you were walking all the way. Did you take sticks or any kind of...
Yeah, I had one. I used one hiking pole. You know, okay. A lot of pilgrims use two hiking poles.
Yeah, for me, I kind of hate them. I don't like them. I don't know. I don't know how do you walk with things in my hands, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I can never do two. People do that, like, to keep the pressure off their knees. Uh-huh. I can never do two walking sticks, but I used one walking stick to kind of keep my balance, because I fall a lot. I fell countless times the Camino, and having a walking stick kind of helped keep me steady and stop me from falling.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed a free hand if I did fall to get myself back up. So that's another reason why I couldn't use two hiking poles. Why I just use one.
Mm-hmm. I love the situation. You know, the story that you tell about Don. You know, the walking slow. What do you think gives you the Camino? Because also that allows you for, in your case. You know, one of the things that I love the most about the Camino is meeting people and taking more time. You know, and a lot of people, a lot of times, you know, you were saying that probably walking the Camino slow was kind of like something bad, something painful. But for other people, you know, having the chance to take 46 days to walk the Camino and being able to enjoy that in such a long time. Right now, there's a group that is called Slow Strollers in the Camino. People that take about 50, 60 days to walk the Camino. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, that has to be magic. So how was, you know, the walking, the seeing people? You talk probably with at least, you know, 25% more people than the average pilgrim.
Yeah, I definitely thought about that, how it kind of, it allowed me kind of taking the Camino a little more, because I was going so much slower. Mm-hmm. You know, I stopped to sleep in more towns. I met more people. It was nice kind of, because I know, like, most people do the Camino, they're kind of with the same group of people the entire way. You see the same people the whole way. But for me, I would kind of get in like kind of grooves where I'd be with the same people for a couple of days, and that group would kind of move ahead and be a new group of people. So I kind of saw like four or five like groups of people that started in St. John different times. So it was kind of, I got to see a bunch of different groups instead of just one kind of group the whole way, which was nice.
And was there any kind of typical pilgrim, you know, after walking, seeing so many groups pass, were you seeing that, you know, we always say that there's the Chinese pilgrim, the American pilgrim, the German, the Italian. Would you say that those kind of like of personas are true in the Camino?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think people come from different cultures. You're seeing all these cultures in the Camino, so you're going to see similarities in people's cultures. Mm-hmm. Throughout the way. So I definitely saw like, oh, Italian pilgrims do certain things, German pilgrims do certain things. I definitely saw that, which was kind of cool.
It's funny what we say, you know, I don't know why the Koreans are the low ones with the plastic bags. Italians are always, you know, spaghetti and cooking and everything. And more like, Spaniards and Italians were always louder. And, you know, the Americans will always say that you will go with the iPad or with the MacBook to the Camino. So it is funny how, you know, but at the end, everyone becomes the same, and there's not much, you know, of anything. You know, the Camino is all equal and people walking. So what was the best part of the Camino, you know, when you start walking? Was they reaching your expectations? Then it was the first time you were in such a challenge. How was the feeling, you know, when you already were in your 15, 20 day?
Yeah, I think it met my expectations. I really didn't know what to expect when I went there. It was just kind of, I just kind of wanted to, you know, have an adventure, challenge myself while I still had the ability to. And I think I definitely found what I was looking for. I think a lot of the best parts of it were actually getting through the hard parts, like getting over the Pyrenees, like just the feeling of bliss of just knowing that you got over that is worth it. And I had quite a few things happen to me. I got food poisoning at one point. I got bed bugs a couple of times. And like looking back, I mean, that was miserable when I was going through that. But looking back, it was kind of like, when I got through that, it was kind of nice. It was fun to have known that, you know, I got through all that. I kind of learned a lot getting through all that.
It is so funny, you know, because I truly believe that the parts that we remember better in life, you know, the hardest parts, because at the end, the harder you go or the lower you fall, the highest, you know, you will reach and the highest you will stand up again. And in the Camino is the same, you know, we remember the times that we suffer because those lead us to the times that we shine, you know. And I think a lot of people, they think of the Camino, you know, as that beautiful Instagram or video, all the stuff that people tell, you know, but I think there is a really, really sad part, a really, really hard part of the Camino. And that's, you know, why it's so amazing, because it's so well designed that on the first day you struggle so much. Also, by the time you arrive, whether you struggle still, but the meseta in the middle is a struggling, easy walk, but struggling mentally. So it's just funny how well designed it is for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think the middle of the meseta, that's actually a hard part too, because like it's just so flat and you can see so far, and it just feels like you're not making any progress. And that was kind of a mentally hard part there, getting through the meseta. but yeah, I think all the hard parts, it just makes finishing it that much better, knowing how much harder it was for you to get there.
And tell us, you know, for the people that probably everybody is listening know the story, that you have to carry your own rock from home. You carry in your backpack and you leave your rock in the Cruz de Ferro, that finally, you know, for the ones that don't know, there was a big problem. They were fighting, they were going to be doing like a little park over there, and finally it's been cancelled. Right now they're setting up, you know, some air generations over there, so there's still a couple fight, but I guess, you know, everything will stay like it is. It's beautiful. But tell us the story of your rock.
Yeah, so I guess most people know Cruz de Ferro, it's when you leave a rock behind that you bring from home. It's about leaving behind a burden that you brought with you from home onto the trail. But for me, when I kind of thought about what I was going to leave behind, what my burden was going to represent, you know, I knew that my burden was having muscular dystrophy. You know, that was my burden. It made it so much more difficult for me having that. That was my burden on the trail. And I realized, you know, I couldn't physically leave that behind. That wasn't something I could physically leave behind. So I kind of had to kind of reimagine what my rock represented. And I think it was kind of my thing that I wrote in my blog, was that it's, I didn't leave my rock behind to let go of a burden, but I left it behind to swap it for truth. So the truth was that I was going to have muscular dystrophy the rest of my life. I couldn't hide from that. I couldn't get away from that. So I needed to kind of embrace that. I think it was kind of, it's not healthy to think that that's something you can let go. You kind of have to, embrace that. You can't get away from that. And I think it's not, like, you can't choose the burdens that you have in your life, but you can choose how you carry them. That was kind of what the rock represented to me. It was leaving behind, you know, the idea that having a disability is something I needed to get away from, and just accepting that it's something that's going to be with me, and just kind of changing the way that I look at having something that challenges me physically.
Thank you, because, you know, from science, I read that point, and like the story that I tell about Cruz de Ferro, so forever gonna change. I love the idea of swapping something, you know, because at the end, all the burdens that we have carrying, doesn't matter what it is, you know, this is not point of leaving them behind and not looking at them. Is, as you say, you know, embrace them, get something, changes for something that gives you power. And, you know, I always remember the story, you know, of when you put a nail on a wall, you know, you can take it off, but the hole is always going to be there. And, you know,
right. We
always say the story of Cruz de Ferro, leaving something behind and forgotten. Like, when you put something behind, sometimes it's like to forget about it. But the way you say, you know, no, I took mine, I embrace it, and it gives you more power to continue on to, you know, to Santiago. So thank you for changing my point of view. And I think, you know, from now on, this story is going to be not about leaving something in Cruz de Ferro, it's about changing something, you know, or empowering yourself for swimming, you know, for something else.
Yeah, I think the rock, I think it's if everyone, it could be whatever you want it to be. It doesn't have to be about leaving burden behind. It could be anything you want. I think the Camino is a personal journey, so don't feel like you have to make the rock about a burden. Even you can make whatever you want. It's, you leave behind whatever you want, you take with you whatever you want. It's
But I love the idea of exchange, you know, in the Cruz de Ferro,
it
talks about leave something behind. I'm like, I love the idea of exchanging, because by the when you arrive there, the Camino has changed you so far, so, you know, you're a different person. That's, there's no discussion about it. And the whole point is also that way, when you go down over there and you arrive to the river, you know, it's one of the days that I remember the most clearly. I'm like, that arriving to Santiago, arriving to Finisterre, what are those days that they're special? Not that the point of Cruz de Ferro was anything, you know, for me, like one of those that you finally see God or whatever. No, it was beautiful, nothing really huge, but then I guess when you start walking, that's when you realize. And how was going down from Cruz de Ferro for you? Because that's a struggle for everyone. So after you having that moment of swapping that and embracing, it took one of the, probably, it's also one of those places that we don't remember because we are so happy, but it's quite a struggle that day.
Yeah, that going down that hill there, I think into the town of El Acebo, I think it's called.
Yeah,
and then,
El Acebo.
Yeah, after that, there's that other part where it's like you have to walk over those, it's really slick rock you have to walk down. I don't know if you remember that part there. Remember, I slipped and fell in that part there. I fell in really hard. The couple towns after after that there. And yeah, I think it's because for me, like a lot of things that challenge me are always like uphill, things are up, things are steps. But there it was kind of weird to have like the downhill be just as challenging as going uphill. It's just a lot of parts there. You're just walking on like just loose rocks. It's kind of tough there.
I remember quite clearly because one of our family members, you know, he turned his ankle and he had to go home because of that little part. So it's sometimes we don't think about it as a hard part, but I truly believe that it's probably one of the hardest.
Yeah, I think it was nice for me to have that after Cruise Affair where it's like you have that moment where you kind of embrace the journey and then it's, you know, it's not over yet. You still have to get through a lot more.
So tell us a little bit. You say that everybody goes to the Camino trying to figure in our lives, no? And I agree with you that we all go to the Camino with a backpack in the one that we carry, you know, so many different things as we talked before. What was for you, you know, the meaning of the Camino?
I think for me, it was just kind of, like I said before, just kind of embracing who I am, you know, facing a challenge from my own point of view and just finding my own kind of meaning of what it meant to be strong and what it meant to, you know, have a challenge and be able to accomplish it. I think that was kind of what it was, what it was for me.
And then after all of that, we walked through the Pyrenees, we finished Cruz de Ferro, Ocebreiro, you arrived to Santiago, and there's no magic in Santiago for you. There wasn't one of those, you know, a lot of people, they always describe Santiago sometimes. I think we make a little poor coelos of ourselves and we remember things a little bit more than they were, but in your case, you react like they weren't when you expected the arrival.
Yeah, I mean, because Santiago, you kind of anticipate the whole way, and you're kind of constantly thinking about, I'm going to get there, it's going to be great when I reach there. When you get there, it's like, it's just another city that you walk through. It's just another place. I think that's kind of humbling in a way. It's like, it wasn't about reaching Santiago. It was the journey that you went through. But I think for me, initially, when I got there, I had a good time in the Camino. I learned a lot. It was a good experience for me, but I didn't have like that fulfilling feeling when I first got there in 2017. So what kind of that led to me in 2018, the next summer, I went back to the Camino. I went to the Portuguese Camino, and hiked from Porto along the coastal route there back to Santiago. And then I did the walk to Finisterre. I really wanted to do the walk to Finisterre. So that was kind of the reason I did the Portuguese Camino, kind of like a walk leading into that.
So in your first Camino, you finished in Santiago and you went home?
Yeah, I went home right after Santiago. That was the ending for me. The next year I went back with the intention of doing the walk to Finisterre, then I was going to walk to Murcia, and then I was going to do that loop back to Santiago, and then I was going to do a portion of the Camino in Gles. I had all those plans, but when I got to Finisterre on the coast, that was kind of the moment where I kind of realized I didn't need to go any further. I didn't need to go to Murcia or the Camino in Gles. I reached that moment where I felt like the Camino had, you know, given me what I wanted.
So how was the going home? You know, I guess when you ride to Santiago after 46 days of walking, you know, of challenge and not finding or finding, but without, you know, the expectation that everybody, you know, that talks about the Camino de Santiago, were you going home, you know, optimistic, or were you happy? Were you just, you know, it is what it is. The Camino told me a lot of things, but Santiago wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, I think it just left me kind of wanting more. It just left me, you know, I didn't quite know what it was that I didn't find when I was there. And it just, that kind of feeling kind of made me go back again. I think that's kind of what happens for most people, where it's like you reach Santiago, it's not what you expect. It's not this like magical thing. So it's like, so it makes you go back. You want to keep you still looking for that, that moment where you kind of reach that moment where you feel fulfilled. I think that's what I finally got when I went back in 2018. I reached that moment where I knew I had reached the end of my journey.
And how was the Camino Portugués when you decided, you know, for me, the Camino Portugués has been also one, I think, of my favorite ones. I love it. I did the Coastal with the Variante Espiritual, and for me so far is one of the ones that I enjoy the most.
Yeah, it had its it's nice in the way that there's less people there. I think it's less crowded, it's a little more the less beaten path. But I definitely had it's less physically challenging, so I think it had less moments where I kind of felt like I overcame things. It was a little more, I don't want to say dull, but it was kind of like, you know, I walk every day, I get to the next place. There wasn't as many obstacles. I didn't meet as many, because there's a lot of people there, I didn't meet as many people, so it didn't have a lot of, like, as many, like, people that I met along the way. So it was a little different journey. It was still very fulfilling, but it wasn't I think for everyone, your first Camino is the best Camino. Like, that's like the first one you do is always the best one. It's kind of hard to compare to that later on, because every Camino is going to be unique.
Yeah. And how was the arrival to Santiago, the second arrival? Because after the first one, I guess you have some, in a way, expectations of arriving to Santiago. So what happened when you?
For me, I continued to go on further to Finisterre and to the coast. So yes, it didn't right really, away. That wasn't really. Yeah, I had like one, took one day off.
Okay.
But basically right away. But that wasn't really the ending for me. It just kind of felt like another city that I was passing through on my way to the coast. So yeah, once again, Santiago wasn't really didn't really feel like the end for me. It was when I finally got to Finisterre.
And that's one of the things, you know, I think that the walk into Finisterre and Muxia, for me, Muxia is the place, you know, where I found that Santiago when I, you know, finally hit me. But I guess, you know, everybody finds the Santiago. Santiago's, you know, it's not a place, I guess. It's a place more than that, no? So what happened when you arrived to Finisterre? Because for a lot of people, you know, Finisterre is that place for party. For others, it's that amazing place. For others like you, you know, it's the place that they finally found what they were looking for.
Yeah, I think it was, I mean, when I was walking, when I reached Finisterre and, you know, you do the walk to the lighthouse there. Even when I left that morning from Finisterre to walk to the lighthouse, that whole way I was thinking, you know, tomorrow I'm going to head to Muxia. I'm going to continue on. But when I reached Finisterre right at sunrise, I was just standing there on the coast there, just looking at the sunrise and just the water. And just, it's a very just kind of peaceful kind of spiritual kind of place there. And it just kind of hit me that I just felt like it felt like the end. It just felt like the moment where I had gotten all that I needed.
And then you decided to go home. But I guess if you have planned for going back to Santiago, you probably have 5-6 more days already before your flight.
Yeah, I was going to be in Spain for another 2 weeks, actually, after I reached Finisterre. But I just wanted to go home. So I changed my flight to go home a couple of days after I got to Finisterre.
Wow. I guess, but that's the beauty, you know, I guess. And what you say, you know, the Camino calls you, but I guess also your home. You know, when a lot of people ask me which book to read for the Camino, a lot of people, they say the Paulo Coelho, The Pilgrim. I always say The Alchemist. The Alchemist is so much more the Camino for me than the Pilgrim. I don't know if you've read both.
I actually haven't read The Alchemist. I've only read the
Okay,
the
then you have one. You can do it. It's super, super easy book. You can read it in one afternoon, but after you read it, you will tell me. So what would you tell to people that is in your same situation, you know, dealing with something in life, you know, and trying to challenge themselves? What will be your advice?
I think the biggest thing is just finding your own pace in life. That was kind of the message of the Camino for me. It's just everyone moves at their own pace. You have to find something that works for you, because everyone's life is so different. And you can't compare yourself to someone else for anything. You have to find your own reference point for life. I think that's the biggest message that I could give someone.
I think that can be the title, you know, for the Camino, finding your own pace. And that's what the Camino teaches you, that at the end, you know, you can compare yourself in every aspect of life with all the other people, that at the end, your Camino is your own and your life is your own. And with things that they are going right now, you know, it is about finding that pace and deciding when it's time to go home, no? Because at the end, if something has tell us, you know, all these years, is that the important things. And for you, I guess, you know, when you hit for Finisterre, you were like, you know, it's time to go home for many reasons, but that's the important things that the Camino tell you. Instead of staying for there, you could probably, you know, like many American, but a lot of friends will tell you, I'm like, dude, you have 2 weeks in Spain, enjoy them, no?
Yeah. I mean, I had spent so much time there, like the summer before and the summer, I just kind of felt like I needed to go home. I just felt like I'd gotten everything I needed to get out of it. I can't quite explain what it was. I mean, I would have loved to be in Spain longer. I mean, there's so much to do there, but I just mentally just reached a point where I just needed to go home.
I agree with you. There's something that, you know, only the people that can go through it can understand. There's no way to explain it, because as you say, you yourself would love to stay 2 more weeks, but what your heart tells you is, you know, go home, and then you go home. So tell us a little bit, Brian, any more challenges ahead, any more Caminos, any more hikes, or what are you planning?
Well, right now, I mean, I'm not really a point in my life. You know, I did the Caminos back in 2017, 18. I was working part-time jobs. I was in a place in my life where I could take off, you know, a month here, a month there. But now I'm not really at that point in my life where I can take off whenever I want. I'm kind of settling down at this point. So I have to plan those things out a little more, but Yeah, I think there's another adventure in store somewhere in the future. I don't think I'm done challenging myself. I think there'll be other things.
Another Camino, maybe? Another...
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. It's nothing in the plans right now. I'm just kind of taking things day at a time, getting through this pandemic here. But I think there's more things in store in the future.
Well. I bet you have a long list of the Caminos, the way we started this interview with you. The long list of the Caminos out there and the long list of things to do. So I hope we will hear from you soon when in your new adventures. And thank you for being with us today. And as we always say, buen camino, Utrella.
Yeah, buen camino. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for listening to El Camino People, the podcast with me, your host, José Maradonaz. If you like our show, remember we have a Patreon that we created. It's called Buy Me a Coffee. So you can go to elcaminopeople.com and on the top bar you will see a little coffee, and over there you can support our cause and buy me a coffee so I can keep editing, creating and interviewing more pilgrims to get the love of the Camino far, far away. We are planning great projects that we will let you know soon. And if you know anyone that you think is interesting, anyone that deserves to be here on the podcast because he has a story, and you always know what we say, because some stories, they really need to be told. We need to encourage the people, we need to help the people to find what they need. And sometimes the Camino, it is what they need, so it's something like that. So help us, so we can help others. Anyway, thank you. Remember, every Tuesday in English, every Thursday in Spanish, El Camino People.